Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to another video and podcast from fantasyfootballscout.co.uk. My name is David and once again I am joined by Mark Jobling from the Fantasy Football Scout Editor's Room, coming to us live from the scene of the season review at Scout as we look back on the season just gone and pick out some key talking points. And we've been at this a couple of days now, haven't we, Mark? We've season finished a couple of days ago now. How are you feeling now that the dust has settled on yet another fantasy campaign?
The first few days or so is definitely sort of relief, pretending that I need this big rest. But give it a couple of weeks, maybe when the fixtures come out, and then all of a sudden be looking forward to the next season again and the cycle starts. But going to Italy next week on holiday, so that should be
nice.
It's break. Are you going anywhere?
I haven't decided yet. It's all my return to Scout has all happened very last minute, so I've all plans have been the best laid plans of mice and men, shall we say. Whatever the rest of that expression is. I can't remember what it is. But I'm certainly going to be doing what you are going to be doing over the summer, which is waiting for the new campaign to start. That is absolutely for sure. And one of the best ways that we can prepare ourselves for the new campaign at a time when we don't really have much else to do, looking back on the one just gone and picking out some key talking points is a good way of doing it. And we've already started with goalkeepers. So elsewhere on the Fantasy Football Scout YouTube channel and on our podcast channels as well, you can have a listen or watch through of that. Today, we are going to talk about defenders. And it all forms part of the Fantasy Football Scout Team of the Season, which is always a bit of a postseason event. We've got articles on the website detailing the best players in each of the four positions, based perhaps maybe on the points they scored, the value they offered, or maybe just some incredible moments that they gave fantasy managers on a sort of very sentimental level. And it's all distilled into something that has maximum audience input. Mark, do you want to tell us about how the readers, listeners, and or watchers can get involved in picking that team of the season?
Yes. So on the Scout homepage, the article itself should be fairly simple to find on the homepage. And at the top of that, there is a voting system. You can vote up to five defenders, where at least the top three will feature in the squad. We'll see, it depends on how the other votes come in the other positions.
Yeah, I have to say, you guys will have a challenging time picking the actual team when the results come through, because you will also have to pick the formation as well and compare perhaps maybe the fourth most and fifth most popular defenders with the same players in midfielders and forwards, etc. So I don't envy you on that one. That's going to be a hard decision. But yes, as you mentioned there, defenders is very much the focus at the moment, and there is a lot to choose from, and you can vote for five of them. So let's get started with two defenders who I'm sure have... you've got a lot of affinity for, Mark, which is Kieran Trippier and Fabian Schär at Newcastle.
Yes, it's sort of been a season of two halves defensively for Newcastle. I'm pretty sure that Trippier is very likely to be near the top of the votes, because the only thing that denied him 200 points was that final day own goal, because he ended on 198. There was a late resurgence for Trippier, because he blanked in 13 of the previous 15 before the last couple of game weeks. And that was a complete contrast to the start of the season, where he returned in 17 of the first 20. So he was embedded into the template for such a long time that actually in the second half of the season, there wasn't a lot of gain to be made in rankings from Trippier. But let's not forget just how supreme he's been in almost every area. Newcastle's clean sheets still at the end of the season still look quite good in comparison to the rest. And in terms of crossing and taking corners, he's number one for both of those. Number one defender for returns. He's also number one for expected goal involvement. Trippier's had quite a dominant year in terms of FPL defenders.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's weird in a way because of the way the season ended, we're sort of sat here. There's not all that much excitement, I suppose, about Trippier. But that's testament to the fact that he just became part of the furniture. You know, you just sort of just didn't need to notice him. You sort of walk into a room and you don't necessarily take note of the armchair. You just know it's there, and you're definitely not going to get rid of it because you need somewhere to sit down, you know. And so it doesn't become exciting, but it becomes essential. And really, that's what's going to help him probably win the poll because nobody can really look past him. Well, he's certainly probably going to finish top, and then it's the two spots below him that probably are up for grabs to get into that team, would you say?
Almost certainly. Of course, you, the voters, can control that, but I think it's using all sorts of factors. It should be Trippier, really. He just scored the most points, had the most returns. He was fantastic defender. I like the armchair as a nickname. I wonder if the training ground will hear and adopt that as a nickname, but. Yeah. Only Bruno Fernandes created more chances out of any position. So he not only his underlying stats not only sit well on top of defenders, but they just sit well throughout the whole game.
Yeah, and then that obviously
And
is what was the cornerstone of his appeal. I guess before we just touch on his
indeed.
defensive colleague, my question to you is what price would you put him at next season? Because he did, I mean, he was close to the all-time defender points record. Am I right in saying that? Was it 202, maybe? Robertson a couple of years ago, something like
He
that.
was, yeah, he just missed out in the end. Yeah, even if he didn't score an own goal, he probably wouldn't have reached that. But yeah, he's up there amongst the best defenders, but not the top. And it's going to be a large price rise, you would think. Obviously, don't have any insider information on that. But he started at 5 million this year. I don't know, 6.5 maybe? Would you go higher or?
I wouldn't want to go higher. I would be surprised if they did go higher. I think maybe if he does what he did this season just gone, if he can do that again next season, which is possible. Although of course Newcastle would probably want to get their defence back into first half of season shape because second half of season shape it wasn't as good. But if he could do that again, then maybe 7 million for the following season. But I do think that 6.5 is probably what we can expect of him for the new season because he finished above 6 million, and so you'd be hard pressed to. As you know, as FPL Towers to turn around and put his price down. And 6.5 probably feels about 0.5 more than you would want to pay for him. And that's usually a good means test I like to think of when anticipating what the prices are going to be next season. You should think about how much you want to pay for that guy, add 0.5, and that's probably what they'll go with because they want you to make difficult decisions. And as you've mentioned before on the goalkeepers video, it's possible that. Because a lot of the input this season has been that the prices across the board were quite generous the season just gone, the possibility of the prices sort of being pushed up again to compensate for that I seem quite likely. So I think 6.5, your prediction there, I think that could end up being spot on. But it'll be interesting to see what happens to the rest of the Newcastle defence. So we should probably have a quick word on Fabian Scher. And I suppose they haven't all made the list here, but there's a couple of other names involved, I guess. You know, Botman is another one. So, yeah, what about the rest of the Motley crew up there?
Yes, Fabian Scher. I've never owned him myself, but I can imagine how frustrating it would have been to own him because he scored on the opening day of the season, game week one, and that was it. Even though he ended up with an XG expected goals of 4.95. Scher was the number one defender for shots, big chances, on target, almost everything, and yet that was all he had to show for it, that opening day goal. Looking forward, I would imagine that Eddie Howe would be looking to buy another centre back and a left back, partly for squad depth, because I think Newcastle need that with the Champions League added to the list. But also it's quality and quantity. So for example, next season possibly wouldn't trust Scher to be that reliable starter every week. I think there could be some sort of rotation going on there.
Yeah.
Botman might be the more likely one. to as the left centre back. But then again, if a left back does arrive, maybe Dan Byrne could also be that left centre back now. So I still think going forward, Trippier is the one nailed name in the Newcastle backline.
Yeah, that seems very fair. And well, he's certainly yards ahead of his defensive colleagues this season. That is for sure. Now, let's come all the way down south then to North London. It's for the first time I can remember in a very long time that we've sat here with two Arsenal defenders who made the shortlist for team of the season. I think the last one who probably came this close was probably Bellerin in the year that Leicester won the league, because I think Arsenal ended up, I think, finishing second that year, I think. They pipped Spurs to second place on the last day of the season. I think is the last time that we had an Arsenal defender in this conversation. Here we are with two. And it obviously has been an incredible season for Arsenal. I've got to be honest, I don't know how to differentiate between Ben White and Gabriel. They both just had fantastic campaigns. But yeah, why don't you tell us a bit more about what they achieved this year and what that means for the team of the season, possibly?
Yes, Ben White did finish on 10 more points and started at a cheaper price. So based on that, you would probably give him the edge over Gabriel. But I think now that the season's over, we can maybe start appreciating how brilliant the Arsenal assets have been this season to us, even if the end didn't quite go to plan for them. And to have Ben White starting at 4.5 and Gabriel starting at 5 million, they started the season with a bang. There were 7 clean sheets from the first 14. And that did fade, just like with Newcastle, it did fade near the end. But they both had attacking contributions as well. So Gabriel scored 3 times. And Ben White scored twice with 5 assists. And he ranked quite highly for defender touches in the final third. So they very much justified their final spots of second and fourth amongst defenders. They were pretty reliable for a long time, even if it faded towards the end. The strange thing about Arsenal's defence was that they had the most away clean sheets with 10, but they only kept 4 at home, and one of them was on the final day. So going into the final day, Arsenal had one of the worst home defences in terms of clean sheets.
Yeah, it's a very strange season, as you said, especially in terms of the way that it ended as well. But it was those attacking returns that really made the difference, I think. I mean, I actually never owned Gabriel throughout the whole season, but I had Ben White for a long time. And I really enjoyed watching Match of the Day highlights, because I would watch Arsenal concede and it would cost Ramsdale owners their clean sheet and Gabriel owners their clean sheet and a couple of others. And then watch Ben White pop up. He seemed to always just pop up on the edge of the box, cutting inside and, you know, just throwing his body at things, because a lot of those assists would sometimes come from the ball just coming off him and then someone else turning in, or obviously very good finisher as well. Sometimes that's quite useful in fantasy. I think we sort of discussed that on the goalkeeper's video, that actually if you've got an Arsenal defender and other people have got a different one, you're actually better off in a world where they don't keep a clean sheet and then you get the attacking returns. And that's quite a nice thing to see, really, because it just helps just give them lots of strings to their bow, really. Not quite like Trippier, because he was better than these guys in pretty much every area. But, you know, with Ben White, when I owned him, and I imagine that Gabriel owners probably felt the same way, you just felt like you would get something. It would come from somewhere. That was the thing. And especially at the price they were, that was quite good value. But yeah, speaking of Ben, let's go for a different one now. We had two Davids in the goalkeeper one, 3 if you included me. We got two Bens in the defender section this time. Well, actually, speaking of me, let's go with Ben Mee. Nice to see him sort of pretty much straight in there, really, for fantasy, because he was sort of a fantasy football fan favourite for a little while at Burnley. And yeah, carrying on his legacy at Brentford. Nice to see.
Yes, yeah, he was one of 6 defenders to score 3 times. So, and I think at least one of them was very early on. So, not long after he signed from Burnley, managers were already noticing that he could be quite a useful signing. And as we discussed with David Raya yesterday, Brentford did keep 12 clean sheets in the end. So, 12 clean sheets, 3 goals. He was quite a reliable steady performer throughout the season. I think 2 million squads for most of the latter third. So he was reliable, solid, and he ended up as the fifth best defender. So no real complaints with him.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, I look back at some of these things and I definitely think I really should have been on the Brentford defence more often than I was. They often kept clean sheets in games that we didn't expect them to. The last day of the season absolutely is a classic example of that. So maybe there's some you know, hindsight bias potentially, but you know, they offered a good price throughout a lot of the season, and you know, me certainly wasn't the only one from that defence to you know, really ask fantasy managers the question like, why don't you own me? So it's going to be tricky for next season because they might not have Raya. I mean, they might do, but at the very least, we're probably expecting probably a 0.5. Increase probably across the board, you'd imagine, for this defence for next season. So might be tricky to be too heavily invested, but I'm certainly going to have them on my radar more than I did last season because, yeah, I feel like I made a mistake there. But let's talk about someone else who normally was on the radar and then kind of was off it again and then came back on it again and really sort of has made it just about into the team of the season defender shortlist pretty much at the last sort of 5, 6, 7, 8 game weeks. And that is Trent Alexander-Arnold, who had an odd year, but did the job in the end in terms of if his only goal was to get on the shortlist, he's done it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he did mention that in a pre-season video that his aim was to get on the scout season awards list. So in that respect, yes, it was a very late rise. I looked into it and, going into the World Cup break, so after game week 16, he was only 25th amongst all defenders. And, you know, he's gradually rose through the ranks, but he's ended up joint second behind Trippier. And, yeah, his new inverted role, sort of a fullback slash midfielder, inspired a great return to form at the end. He got 8 returns in a row between game weeks 30 and 36. So, and he was the number one defender for big chances created. So certainly by the end of the season, we sort of were reunited with a name from the past. And it'd be interesting to see next season whether, you know, does he remain at the same price? I imagine the new position is here to stay. A lot of Liverpool's clean sheets was kind of overachievement because they were the third worst team for conceding big chances, but their 14 clean sheets was behind only one team. So, and Trent did miss 4 of those clean sheets. So just imagine if he didn't miss them, he might have been quite close to Trippier in the end.
Yeah, it's an odd season for him because it feels like Liverpool had a real bad one. But he still came through and was close to posting points levels that we're used to in the past. But yeah, you're absolutely right about the midfield thing. It'll be interesting to see what that does for next season. I personally think he's probably going to stay at the same price because I think that late resurgence was significantly long enough that it would probably mitigate against a price change there. And a new position, which, as you say, looks like it's here to stay, would help. I guess it probably also depends, if we're just talking about the possibility for clean sheets in next season, what else goes on around him in that midfield, because I think we can all probably agree that the main issue that really hampered Liverpool's defensive decline in the end was probably just the issues that they had in central midfield. You know, the back four wasn't protected as well as it could have been. So there is a little bit of a rebuild to come. And so it's worth keeping an eye on that, I think, fantasy managers throughout the summer and moving into pre-season. But the one thing also, I just keep saying this to people, and I think we should all be aware of, is I don't think he's going to change position in FPL yet, because he only played it about eight game weeks, we reckon, 8 to 10 game weeks, something like that. That's probably not enough to justify him switching to midfielder in FPL. But I reckon if he plays that position for the whole of next season, then the season after that, it's going to be hard for FPL not to class him as a midfielder. I mean, that's just my view. What do you think on that one?
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about that, actually. Is it in the game's best interest to keep him as a premium defender? Because if the aim is to encourage more variation next season, and certainly in terms of pricing and stuff like that, to sort of break up the template idea, Does Trent as a defender help with that, or does Trent as a midfielder help with that? Probably, yeah, as you say, I think because it was only for the last 7 or 8 game weeks, you probably remain as a defender this time, but in the future, who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, I'm very nervous of a world where he isn't a defender. Not because I necessarily think it's a wrong world. It's just there's been a lot of change in this world in the last couple of years, and one of the things we can always be sure about is he's going to be a premium defender. If that all of a sudden goes away, then I'm going to question my very reality, to be honest. But it's just
Yeah,
worth keeping an eye
during the cost of living crisis, it was always
on.
something to sort of keep you warm at night. The
Yeah.
Trent would be a defender, so if that changes, then everything's changed.
Yeah, exactly. Well, speaking of things changing, they have been changing quite well at United recently. Things have improved there a lot, and especially towards the end of the season, where I think they kept 12 clean sheets in their last 15 at home or something like that. They did very well at home, didn't they? United, and Luke Shaw very much at the forefront of that. Not quite as an attacking option as a Trent, but not far off. And yeah, it was very useful. Especially in the second half of the campaign. So yeah, what can you tell us about United and Luke Shaw?
Yeah, Luke Shaw had a strong second half to the campaign. If you looked at points just from the World Cup, like from the game week 17 restart, he does rank sixth amongst defenders. And yeah, a lot of the clean sheets sort of escalated as the season got towards its end. And he's really good for bonus points. He's proved his versatility by playing at centre back quite a lot. And even though he was quite low on shots and expected goal involvement in general, he was good at creating chances. So yeah, next season it'll be interesting to see what his status is. You'd imagine every defender on this list, because they've had a good season, are probably all going to have some sort of rise, I suppose. But Shaw is, assuming that Erik ten Hag can keep improving the squad, because it was a tough start to the season for them, and that heavy defeat at Brentford. But things got better towards the end, and if they can continue that into next season, Luke Shaw could be a really strong option.
Yeah, absolutely. I do get a sense that United could be potentially knocking on the door of a title challenge next season if they can start the season as well as they finish this one and then keep it up. Because you would have to say it's the start of the campaign that probably let them down,
Yeah.
points wise in the end. And yeah, it would just depend on those prices. I think we could probably expect. We were talking yesterday about maybe De Gea probably being 5.5 again. And you'd imagine that Shaw would probably then be a little bit more expensive than that. So 6 million possibly a price for him. And it does mean that then at the start of the season we might be choosing between a Shaw and a Trippier because we probably only got room for one of them if we really fancy Trent, for example. So yeah, there's some tough decisions awaiting fantasy managers. It might depend on the fixtures perhaps or maybe some new signings as well. Now I've got a face here that I would never have expected to see in a team of the season list for fantasy, which is no discredit to him as a player or anything like that, but more just the fact that historically, in recent years anyway, Aston Villa have not done that well defensively, and here we are with Tyrone Mings on the list, on the shortlist for defenders of the season. So I've even managed to find a picture where he looks particularly surprised as he's talking to the referee. So yeah, the story of Aston Villa season, it was another fantastic narrative, to be fair. But yeah, it sort of certainly helped Tyrone Mings make a bit of a name for himself.
Yeah, he was. If I remember correctly, was he stripped of the captaincy by Steven
Oh,
Gerrard at
you're absolutely right. Yes, that is very true. Yeah.
the start of the season? They bought Diego Carlos for a lot of money. I think Gerrard's plan was that Mings was now a bench player, certainly not the captain. But then Diego Carlos got injured, and then the rest is history, because Tyrone Mings, especially under Unai Emery, the whole squad's been rejuvenated. And from game week 25 onwards, Aston Villa conceded the fewest goals out of everybody. They never let in more than one in a match, and they kept the joint most clean sheets. So for that final third of the season, their defense was almost elite. And he could have been bought for 4.3 million at some point in that run, but then his price rose at the end because everyone sort of tagged on to it. But yeah, they got 7 clean sheets from 10 at one point. And it's very, I think if you're an Aston Villa fan, you'd be pretty excited about what next season could bring.
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely. And it'd be interesting. It's another team where it'd be interesting to see what the price is, because they had good spells, shall we say, and there were certainly times of the year where you wouldn't want to own a Villa defender. And so it's possible that we might just see them possibly just sort of plateau a little bit. You know, for example, I'd like to see Alex Moreno at 4.5 again, to be honest. Mings might be that 0.5 extra because he's done so well this season. And a lot of that comes down to longevity as well, because I think if Alex Moreno had been playing for the whole season, he might have possibly been in the same bracket, because his stats in particular were looking pretty good. But just too much of a short a sample size in the end for him to get anywhere near this list. But so my eyes on him, certainly. But I know what you mean. Sometimes these centre-backs that pop up with a goal near the beginning of the season, they happen to be the guy that's like the top defender for that team when they have a good run, and that sometimes sucks up a load more managers, because those that just kind of go to the points and look, see who's the highest. Mings, I think, mildly benefited from that, and so it's possible that maybe next season he could be eclipsed by one of the cheaper assets at his club. One final name on the list before we get to the honourable mentions is someone I'm a big, big fan of. This guy I've had in my team since game week 16, I think it was, just before the start of the World Cup, and he never left, and he's still there now. And I hope he doesn't get too much of an increase next season, because I love owning Purvis Estupiñán. It's just such an exciting signing. He feels like an FPL fullback of old, really advanced all the time, decent price, and just always pops up with something. I can't speak highly enough about this guy. So before I start sort of like popping with enthusiasm, I might hand over to you to tell me some of the numbers behind this success story.
Yeah, I'm sort of nervous about what these numbers might do to you. But Brighton in the transfer market, they are just masters at this. They replaced Mark Cucurella with Estupiñán, and arguably like they've improved the team for a lot less money. He's so attacking. It still hurts on a personal level because I benched him for that double game week at the end where he got the 17 points at Arsenal. So that stayed on the bench. And that was a huge drop in the rankings because by that point he was in so many FPL squads. He exploded from game week 20, really, because he got 6 consecutive returns, each of at least 6 points. So that put him on the radar. And from that same starting point, no defender has had more penalty area touches in that time or clean sheets. One of those clean sheets was because he was substituted before they conceded, which I think was against Fulham. But yeah, he's such an exciting defender. He gets forward. He certainly passes the eye test, and when you delve into the underlying stats, he passes that test as well. So a very good FPL asset. We enjoyed him at 4.5 million, but again, that might be it.
Yeah, those days are over, I think. I think 5 or 5.5 is my guess. I think maybe if it depends how kind they're feeling. If they turn around and go that it was really the second half of the season where it exploded, they can get away with 5, but as I said, I think whatever price you want to pay for a guy, put on 0.5, and that's probably what you're going to have to pay for him. So, but the thing is, I still think that's a good price. It just means that instead of being able to own him alongside a Shaw and a Trippier, you're probably going to have to pick one, and it probably comes down to the fixtures. But as you said there, I mean, with the amount of penalty box touches that he was having, you know, he can offer a lot, so he could potentially even eclipse them from open play. So, yeah, we'll see what happens.
The only thing is, as we saw with Brighton midfielders at the end, in those final weeks, De Zerbi did like to rotate quite a bit, and that was without European football. So do Brighton over the summer buy another left back, and does that bring in rotation with is it the Europa League or the Conference?
I think it is the Europa League. I think. But either way, Thursday nights are going to be busy for them, as you say. So that is an additional thing to think of. But I suppose they'll equally be busy on Wednesdays. Will United and both Uniteds, Newcastle and Manchester. So all of those players that we sort of anticipate being in the 5.5 to 6.5 bracket, could they be potentially rotation threats? It's possible. So we're going to have to keep an eye out for next year's 4.5s, that's for sure, as we always do. Let's talk about some honourable mentions, the chief of which is John Stones, who himself was a sort of a poor man's Trent, but in a fantasy sense, in the sense that he did move into midfield, but slightly more of a holding number six role than a marauding box-to-box number eight that Trent was afforded. But either way, played in a slightly more advanced position, did help him a little bit with attacking returns. Not loads, but a little bit. You know, he's closer to the goal. But also, the key thing was that he became very integral to Man City's team, didn't he? So slightly more nailed on, slightly, I say. than before. So he's the chief of the honourable mentions. So yeah, tell us a bit about him and a few of the other names as well.
Yeah, Man City defenders in general, in many areas, they were the best defence in the league in terms of goals, conceding shots, stuff like that. I think on target, they only conceded 92 on target, which was quite a distance the best, but none of their defenders started more than 24 games. So that, it's tough to justify the stress of owning one when you just don't know.
That's true.
If they're going to play or not. Even João Cancelo, we all started the season thinking he was the one that avoided rotation, and that didn't last, did it? So it was, it was frustrating to miss out. But I looked into it, and they had a knack of always conceding that one goal. Even though the stats are fantastic under the surface, there was 11 matches where their expected goals conceded was under 0.5 and they still conceded. And six of them came quite late on. So I know Edison owners were particularly frustrated by this sort of thing where Man City would be comfortable, they'd be in the lead, they were going to win the game, and yet they would always find a way to concede that goal.
Yeah.
And when you add that to the fact that you have no idea if your defender's going to start or not, it was just a no-go area, really.
Yeah, it's good enough only for honourable mentions rather than a specific slot in the final shortlist, that's for sure. And it's a great point about Cancelo. It feels like such a long time since we had him in fantasy, but yet he was probably the nailed-on number one defender in everyone's teams when we went into the World Cup, probably. He was probably just ahead of Trippier, just based purely on sort of nostalgia and legacy. You know, he'd done it a lot more. And I know that there were still some doubts about Trippier. You know, can he sustain this form at that time? It just feels like such a long time ago. I mean, it was a long time ago. This was a very long season in the end because we had a massive World Cup in the middle. But if even Cancelo, it was spectacular fall from grace, really. You know, went from being easily the most nailed on Man City defender to being the black sheep and kicked out the door and probably will leave the club. It's very hard to know what happened there, but such is life under Pep, I suppose. You never know. It's very unpredictable. So a couple of other names on the honourable mentions, which I actually have pictures up of, but in your article was mention of Chilwell, Saliba and Robertson. Any final word on those three?
They weren't really close to the shortlist, really. There was a few weeks where Chilwell could have felt essential, but then he got injured again. Saliba was the third best defender when he got hurt, but his season ended early as well. Andrew Robertson, it was his worst season since 17-18. He still ranked quite well for chances created and XGI amongst defenders, but he was sort of, it just wasn't his year, really.
Yeah, and especially with Trent really sort of coming to the fore, him shifting into midfield made the sort of the fullback situation at Liverpool very asymmetric in a way that one of them was going to have to bear the brunt of the defensive work, and it ended up being Robbo, didn't it? Which really just hampered his potential in the end, which is a shame. He's one of my favourite fantasy sort of icons of the last five or six seasons. So hopefully we see more from him next season, but it's hard to predict it with that with that Liverpool shift, as we've mentioned. But yeah, that's all the names. So don't forget, guys, if you want to vote in the team of the season, then head to fantasyfootballscout.co.uk and you can find the polls in the poll widget on the sidebar. And yeah, you've got all of this week really to go through those different positions and pick your favourite players in each of those. We have already covered goalkeepers. If you've not checked that out, then go back and have a listen or a watch of that. And we've got midfielders and forwards to come as well. Slightly more informally, also done a video on the biggest flops of the season. We've talked about Edison in this video. Believe me, I went to town on just how frustrating he was in that one. So if you want to check that one out, that's already up on the YouTube channel. So make sure you check that out. There'll be other content throughout the summer. We continue our season review for the first couple of weeks. We're going to start looking ahead to the new season as soon as we possibly can. Also, don't forget, this weekend coming up, we've got Game Week 39 with Team North versus Team South, and there's plenty of Scout involvement and some of your other favourite content creators involved in that. So make sure you head to Game Week 39, North versus South, Dakota UK, and make a donation to Street Child United, because, yeah, it's a fantastic cause. So all sorts of things going on during the summer, making sure you get your rest, but making sure that we keep ticking that box of keeping fantasy in your life in a way where you just don't have to make any decisions. That's the main thing, isn't it, Mark? No decisions for the next couple of months.
no decisions in theory, but in theory. I'll get the spreadsheet out soon and start planning squad structure, all that nonsense. probably
that's what a fantasy football summer absolutely has to be. So yeah, we're here to help you that if we can. Now, one last thing before we go is, do not forget to like this video, subscribe to the Fantasy Football Scout YouTube channel, and hit that bell notification. The summer especially is a time where you really do need that bell notification, because with there being no game week structure, you need that bell notification to know there's new content. So make sure that is ticked. And with that, I will leave you guys to enjoy the rest of your hopefully sunny day, and we will see you next time. So goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.
Cheers, guys.